you don't understand the situation. Hi, summer's coming, and now's the time to learn self-sufficiency. If you're going to eat from nature's bounty of wild edible plants, remember, there's a learning curve. Experience is the best teacher, but that means time. To speed it up, you'll need to build on the wisdom of a teacher who has lived it. Author Linda Runyon is that teacher. Her Wild Food Knowledge Package is the crash course. The DVD gives you a 3-hour overview of her world directly from her. The book gives you an in-depth reference with all of the insider know-how you'll ever need. And her wild cards are your portable summary and cheat sheet for your field work. This 3-pronged learning system will take you from spectator to scholar to gourmet survivalist in weeks, not years. Folks, I can vouch that...
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing in the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you that views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And, of course, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Pastor David Whitney of the Institute of the Constitution. We're going to be talking about our Constitution. Now, people say, oh, well, you're always talking about the Constitution, and you're absolutely right. It is the very essence of what America is all about. Certainly, every one of our elected officials swears to uphold the Constitution and defend it from all enemies, both foreign and domestic, and they've done that ever since America was created as an independent nation. The only trouble is we have an awful lot of people in Washington, D.C., who are really criminals. They're subversives. They don't believe in our Constitution. They want to destroy this nation. They believe in an all-powerful government, which is the antithesis of the Constitution. What a Constitution that they've sworn to uphold actually says. For the purpose of the Constitution was, first of all, to affirm the fact that we have rights that come from God. And, of course, that was the Declaration of Independence, which was, for all intents and purposes, the preamble to the Constitution. It is referred to in the Constitution of the United States. And this certainly was the founding document of the United States. First, the declaration that says that we have rights that come from God and that governments are instituted among men to preserve and maintain those rights. And then we have a constitution that limits the power of the government very intentionally. And all they've tried to distort this, and oh, they can distort it any way they want to, but anybody with an ounce of intelligence knows what it says, and you can read the Federalist Papers and know what the Founding Fathers meant when they talked about the necessity of taking the chains off of the people and putting the chains on the government. Because they believed, as John Locke had said a century before, that government governs best, that governs the least. Limit the power of government and men can be free. Take the chains off of the government and men will become enslaved. And with that as a thought, Pastor David Whitney, thank you so very much for being with us again. You're going to have to speak up a little louder. David, your voice is very, very soft. Are you on a regular line? All right, fine. I'm going to put you on a hold with our producer, and you work it out with him. And because we do want to have a good line, we want people to hear what you have to say. So I'm going to ask our producer. It looks like he's picked up the call, and we'll work it out. Perhaps call Pastor Whitney back again. But you have to understand what is not taught in our schools, and is not taught in our schools because there's a group of people who really hate America. They hate freedom. They believe that we need a feudalistic system. In fact, one of them told, the leader of this group told one of my friends, Congressman Bill Dannemeyer, some men are born to rule, but most men are born to be ruled, and And that's what they really think of us. That's why they sent our boys overseas to fight in no-win wars. That's why, of course, they have done so many things that they're doing, using the American people for all sorts of experiments and our servicemen as guinea pigs, and certainly why they've encouraged immorality here, because they realize that if people are concerned about, really involved with immorality, they're not going to be concerned about righteousness. That's why they want to destroy Christianity, because they know that where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty. Well, let's go. David, are you there?
I'm back. Does that connection work?
Oh, ever so much better. Go right ahead.
Yes. Well, we in previous sessions, we've talked about the Constitutional Convention, the ratification process, and let's dive into the preamble this evening. And as you say, really, the preamble is the Declaration of Independence, which is why when we look at the preamble of the Constitution itself, it's rather brief.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. Go right ahead, David.
And the first phrase, of course, is "We the people." And that needs to be understood in two ways. First of all, it shows that they believed that governmental power is derived from the consent of the governed, from "we the people." That is, the government can only do those things that we the people determine that we choose for them to do. So that, in a sense, we the people are the ones in the driver's seat. We get to call the shots as to what powers we're going to give to our government, and the Constitution is a restrictive document, that it restricts government to only doing those things which we the people have given it permission or given it power to do. It cannot do and must not do anything outside those limited, delegated, enumerated powers that we the people have given to it. The second understanding we need to have of that phrase, "we the people," is that it shows our framers had a view of government that was a covenantal or a contractual nature. That is, we enter into a covenant, so to speak, in creating the civil government. Because if you think about the situation and how it took place in 1776, as soon as they signed the Declaration of Independence, every one of the 13 colonies and now states, those 13 states had no government. They had abolished their connection with England, and they had to rush home, and each state had to draft its own constitution and vote on it and put their state government together and then come back together and draft the Articles of Confederation for federal government. So the government was only in existence because we the people brought it into existence by our constitution. And the constitution, therefore, is something that we the people have brought into existence. The other phrase that sometimes people get a little confused about, they think, well, we the people only refers to individual citizens. In reality, it refers to the citizens as represented by their state. In fact, if we talk about the original draft of the Constitution, it didn't say we the people. It said we the states, and then it went ahead and listed all 13 states. But as the debate ensued there in the Continental or in the Congressional discussions, they recognized that this was very presumptuous of them to put the names of the 13 states in the preamble here of the Constitution, because what if one of the states decided not to ratify this Constitution? So they said, we really can't say we the states. We have to say we the people, implying we the people as represented by our states. The states had enormous role in really not only crafting, but ultimately ratifying our Constitution.
Hold that thought, David. We'll be back here in just a moment at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Go right ahead, David.
And so when the rest of the preamble really lays out the purposes, the basic purposes for which the government was being formed, that is, in order to, and they list six things here in this set of purposes, in order to, first of all, form a more perfect union. That obviously indicates that the union existed before the Constitution. The Constitution didn't create the union. The union existed because of the Articles of Confederation. And the Articles of Confederation were a form of union, but they recognized, as we've talked about before, a number of significant problems that the Articles of Confederation had. And in order to end those problems and to deal with those problems, they were drafting a constitution that would, in their mind, form a more perfect union. And indeed it did, because it resolved many of the problems that existed under the Articles of Confederation. That was the first purpose, to form a more perfect union. The second purpose was to establish justice. Now here, we need to pause and think about this for a moment. They are assuming that there is a standard of justice, and it's a good and a valid question for us to ask 200 plus years later here. Now, what was their standard of justice? Well, the answer to that isn't given to us directly here in the Constitution. We have to go back to the Declaration of Independence. What was the standard of justice by which they based all the decisions they were making? Well, they stated very clearly there in the Declaration of Independence. It's the laws of nature and of nature's God. That first phrase, the laws of nature, they said, referred to human conscience and reason. That is, people know what God's law is. They know, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not murder, and so on. They have an innate understanding of that because God's written his law on the hearts of every human being. Every human being, as Paul expounds in Romans chapter 2, verses 14 and 15. So that's the first phrase, the laws of nature. The laws of nature's God directly referred to the Bible, the revealed law of God. They had a standard of what is just, what is right, and what is wrong, and that standard was the Christian standard based upon the Bible. So they had a standard of justice, and they were seeking by this Constitution to establish justice. And so when people talk about justice, oftentimes they like to use phrases and ideas that are actually anti-Christian. They're unbiblical, against God's law, things like Marxism, which basically means stealing from one group of people to give money to another group of people who didn't work for it, earn it, or deserve it, but just, hey, we're going to steal. That's not at all what justice is measured by. And so today, the difficulty we have in understanding that phrase is that many people are relativists. That is, they don't believe in any absolutes, which I always have a fun time talking with somebody who's a relative, you know, relativist. Dr. Stan is like, you believe there are no absolutes, but you say that there are no absolutes. Is that statement you're making an absolute statement? Is it absolutely true? Oh, no, you just say, oh, yes, it's absolutely true. Well, wait a minute then. You're stating that there is some absolute, or at least one absolute, but by that time they're usually glazing over and they're so confused that they can't think about how their own idea of relativism is irrational. It's illogical. It doesn't work. And our founders had a standard. They didn't have a multiplicity of ideas about what is justice. They knew what justice was, and they were establishing this Constitution to establish justice by a fixed and absolute unchanging standard. And here's where people go wrong all the time when they like to talk about a living, breathing Constitution. Sounds like a nice idea, but it's exactly the opposite of what our founders knew would bring about justice, because if the standard keeps changing, like if you're playing a game of football, you know, and this today the end zone is here, and the next week we're going to move the end zone 10 yards the other direction. The week after that we'll move it 20 yards. Wait a minute, you're playing a different game. The game is no longer with a fixed standard. And so we understand that in sports, and we understand that in science. You can't have any weights and measures that change every week. You've got to have a fixed standard. Why not in law? Why not in government have a fixed standard? It's the only sane way to establish justice, to have a fixed standard. And so this Constitution was never meant to be, quote, a living, breathing thing that changes every week or month or year. No, it was to be a fixed, unchanging, and absolute standard based upon God's law. Very clearly. Now, the third purpose for which they were ordaining this Constitution was to ensure domestic tranquility, They had experienced some insurrections that had taken place. There was other insurrections that were threatened, and they had a sense that we need to be sure that we can work in a system of government where peace and security take place for all citizens, including all states, and that was their third purpose in this Constitution. Well, the fourth purpose was to provide for the common defense. And provide is a term that talks about actually expending money. You're going to provide for something, you're going to provide for your children's education, you're going to pay some money to provide for that college education. Well, they were going to provide for the common defense. The framers understood that each state If each of the 13 states stood alone as an independent entity with its own army and did not band together with the other 13 states, it was not a safe condition. We need to understand a little bit about the history of that time. You know, all the European powers had aims and schemes and plans in the New World. You know, the Spanish had their agenda, and obviously the French, especially from the Mississippi on, they had vast stretches of territory they claimed as their own, and of course the English still held Canada, and they had eyes on regaining the 13 colonies in their mind. Well, that's what the War of 1812 was sort of about. The British thought, well, you know, we lost that war for American independence, but we'll foment another war here, and they actually burned Washington, D.C., and attacked Baltimore and so on. They didn't succeed ultimately, but our founders understood that they were continually threatened by European powers. And if the states did not band together with a military force that was drawn from all 13 states, they faced a very likelihood that they would be conquered one by one by either the French or the Spanish or the British, that they did not stand a chance against those large European armies and well-funded military machines that were in the world at that time. And so they wanted to be certain they could have victory, and that was providing for the common defense. Now, let's remember that term providing, because the very next one, the very fifth one, uses a different term: provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare. Now, promoting something doesn't necessarily mean you're going to spend any money on it. You know, you could promote somebody's their book, you want other people to buy it or whatever, but it may not involve any expenditure of a penny on your part to promote something. You encourage it, you tell other people about it, but promoting the general welfare was the fifth purpose they spoke about. And we need to be certain we understand that phrase, because it's been much distorted, twisted, and abused, and has led to the gargantuan government that we have in Washington, D.C. today. General welfare means every single person must benefit from some decision made or some program enacted or some money spent. It cannot be a specific group of people that benefit. If everybody doesn't benefit, or a specific geographic area, say like the Hurricane Katrina, you know, I don't remember how many billions were spent on Katrina in the aftermath, but the rest of the country really didn't benefit from that. Oh, the people down there benefited, sure, but the rest of us...
Well, I'm not so sure that the people down there did benefit. They'd have been a lot better off if the federal government hadn't come in and kept other people from other neighboring states from coming in and helping the people and bringing in supplies. What the federal government did was to block supplies coming in from any other place. They brought in their hired killers, the people from Blackstone, professional mercenaries and killers, to go around door to door terrorizing people and taking away their weapons. People who needed it, because there was no police force, they needed it to protect themselves. And forcing people to leave their homes who were not in any danger at all. I mean, everything the government did down there was really to complicate the matters. We would have been far better off, and the people of New Orleans would have been far better off, if the government hadn't gone in there and wasted all that money and terrorized the law-abiding citizen and taken away their weapons. Why would they have done something like that? Or was this simply a trial for what the future holds? But go right ahead, David.
Yeah, we pray that that's not the case, but it would suppose that there was a test being conducted there. But you're right, and this is what happens when the federal government does things that are outside of its charter, outside of its constitution. They mess it up. They always mess it up. It's not the purpose of the federal government to provide for the specific welfare. No, it was only to promote the general welfare, where everyone is supposed to benefit. You think of the kind of discrimination going on today, age-based discrimination, where the young people are forking over a large chunk of their paycheck every week for Social Security. And they all know that it's very unlikely that they're going to see anything, any penny from that Social Security system, which is already bankrupt and so bad a shape that it will falter without a whole lot of time transpiring here. But that specific welfare, one age group of people benefiting at the expense of another group of people. The federal government has no business doing that. You might argue that some other government, maybe a state government might or something, but not the federal government. It has no permission in our Constitution to ever engage in the actions that will bring about specific welfare. Only promoting the general welfare is permissible.
Well, you're absolutely right, David, and we've got real problems. I just would comment for those of you who do not know, at the end of last year sometime, very quietly kept, they don't want the American people to know, but Medicare now is paying out more than it's bringing in. In the past, it's always brought in an excess amount, and so the government simply stole that money and put in an IOU. Now, of course, it's putting out less than, it's putting out more than it's coming in, so what are they going to do? Well, the whole system is bankrupt. That's why we have to have socialized medicine to ration health care and begin letting them die. Go right ahead, David.
And so promoting the general welfare, I think an illustration that can help people understand the difference between general welfare and specific welfare is, what if I went to Congress, you know, they're handing out billions.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a 4-tape or a 4-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that will protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Berkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Berkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
We're dependent upon God to believe that there is punishment not only in this world but in another world. If you did misdeeds, and certainly as John Adams said, you know, our society was made for a moral and religious people. It wouldn't work for any other. You could not have a government with limited power unless you had moral people. But, of course, that was not what the people who are working behind the scenes today want. The latest statistics show that 40% of all the children born in America are born out of wedlock. That's the end result of the education they began back in the 60s, and they knew it was going to happen. At that time, when I graduated from high school with probably close to 500, 750 kids in the class. Maybe there were two girls who were pregnant, and they said, oh, that's terrible. Oh, why, we've got to bring in sex education. And, of course, it was designed to destroy morality, to break down embarrassment about sex, co-educational sex education year after year. They knew it was going to happen because they saw it happen in Scandinavia, and they wanted to destroy the morality of our society, and they've done a great job. That, and they took God and prayer out of our schools, knowing full well what would happen. And that's why they put the Masons on the Supreme Court, who controlled the Supreme Court, when they took God and prayer out of our schools, because they worship a different God. But, of course, when you watch this discussed up on History Channel, the Discovery Channel, they're never going to tell you what the God is that the Masons worship. But go right ahead.
And that's the key, that liberty comes when we follow God's law. And if we violate God's law, we don't have liberty. Ultimately, we have enslavement. We have bondage. And the author of liberty is our Lord Jesus Christ. He has given us his law for our good. And they knew when they spoke here of blessings, I think they were directly thinking of the scripture that says, blessed is the nation whose God is the Lord. Of course, the corollary to that is, cursed be any nation whose God is any other idol. If you don't worship and follow the Lord Jesus Christ and seek to obey his law, you're not going to have liberty. You're going to have bondage. And the children of Israel experienced that in Egypt, absolute enslavement to the deity, which was Pharaoh. Pharaoh was God, and he was going to enslave all the people, and he'd enslave the Jews for 400 years. Well, our founders knew that King George III had gotten too big for his britches, like some of the other kings, and they believed in the, quote, divine right of kings, which meant the king is the law, and whatever the king says, that's the law, and there is nothing above that. In a sense, the king is elevated to the position of God, and he's the one that calls all the shots. Well, you know, not going to have any freedom, any liberty at all in that kind of system, and as you probably have shared in many of your other shows, that's exactly the kind of system of totalitarianism we're headed towards. That's what they're trying to pull off here, to completely destroy our freedoms, our liberties, steal all our money, steal our property, and enslave us in their new world order system. That's not freedom. That's not liberty. And our founders knew that if we're going to maintain the liberty and the freedom, and they said to secure liberty is the purpose for which they were constructing this Constitution, we could only do so by having a moral and religious people who are following in obedience to God's commands. Well, this also shows that the framers had a fundamental concern for liberty. They were very concerned that people experience the liberty that God has designed for us as human beings. It shows also that they had a great concern for the future generations. They said not just for their own generation to experience the blessings of liberty, but to our posterity, including their children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren and on down, that which means unborn generations were in mind as they penned these words. They were thinking about future generations unborn and wanting those future generations to experience the blessings of liberty. Now think about that in relation to abortion. What does abortion do? It deprives future generations of their God-given right to life, and therefore, of course, all the blessings of liberty that you can enjoy if you are alive. The dead, unborn children have no possibility of experiencing the blessings of liberty. So I see right here in the preamble, you would say that our Constitution forbids abortion. It cannot be, according to this statement in our supreme law of the land.
Well, we're going to be back in just a moment with Pastor David Whitney of the Institute of the Constitution. People really need to learn our Constitution. It is not taught in schools. Or they may talk to you about the three branches of government, but they never explained to you that the secret of America was the power of the central government was to be limited by the chains of the Constitution. For as Thomas Jefferson said, speak not to me of confidence in men, but bind them down with the chains of the Constitution. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, Dr. Stan, back here at Radio Liberty, and of course we don't hear that song much anymore because the people who control the music industry would rather put on the hip-hop songs and the anti-Christian songs and the songs that push moral depravity, but the songs that talk about God and blessing America, well, that's sort of passé. And there really are people who want to use music to mold our minds and shape our thoughts, and they do a pretty good job with it. Go right ahead, David.
Well, the implying the protection of the unborn children as part of our Constitution is pretty controversial because, after all, the Supreme Court, supposedly, in 1973, legalized abortion. Well, first of all, the Supreme Court could never legalize abortion because the Supreme Court cannot make law. They do not make law. They render opinions, and the opinion only governs that one case before them, Roe v. Wade in that case. And furthermore, what should have happened to those justices that voted for Roe v. Wade in that opinion is they should have been immediately impeached and then removed from office. If we had congressmen who had guts and had a constitutional understanding of their job, if we had senators who likewise had guts and a constitutional understanding of their job, those justices would have been out of work in a hurry. They would have been impeached for having violated their oath to the Constitution, because every justice on the Supreme Court takes an oath to uphold the Constitution, and they violated it because they violated this essential principle. You cannot kill the unborn and claim that you're fulfilling the purposes set forth by the Constitution, because it says one of the sixth purpose here that we are setting forth this Constitution in order to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and to our posterity. And certainly abortion is the exact opposite of this statement says the purpose of government actually is.
Well, you hold that thought, David. We're going to be back here in just a moment as we bring all of our stations back on board at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest, Pastor David Whitney, and certainly before we go on, David, I want you to tell our listeners how they can get in touch with the Institute on the Constitution, what they will get when they get in touch with you, why they should get in touch with you, and how they can get up on the Internet and take the course before they ever, certainly, get one of those workbooks and work programs and the set that will allow them to begin teaching it to others.
Yes, Dr. Stan, we have a new way in which students can actually online take the course. That is, well, you need broadband connection because you're watching the videos, streaming videos, so you need enough bandwidth and all to be able to do that. But if you go to our website, iotconline.com, right at the top of the front page there, you'll see online course. You can sign up, send your email key to get into the course. And you can take this course, which will give you a working knowledge of the Declaration, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, to give you an understanding of the philosophical worldview of our founders. It was a Christian worldview, a biblical view of law and government. It will give you the entire course as you do that online, including the tests that you could take. And what we're encouraging people to do is take it individually. Go through it and get an understanding of it, and then purchase a host kit. We actually will discount the cost of the online course, which is $30. We'll take that off the purchase of a host kit because we know that once you've done that individually, then you need to go and grab a group of people together. And I had the privilege tonight of starting a class up in the northern section of our state, Maryland here, a group of people that were, as a result of the Tea Party back in April 15th, aroused to say, we need to understand the Constitution. Part of the problem why we have such high taxation and such egregious violations is we, the people, do not understand our Constitution. So I spoke at the Tea Party, and a group of people got together tonight, and it was very encouraging to see people beginning the process of studying these 12 sessions that Constitutional Law Professor John Eismo does these 12 lectures, and we have two lectures by David Barton. In addition to that, a student manual, when you purchase a host kit, the student notebook has a detailed outline of each of those lectures, as well as test questions and supplemental materials in terms of reading assignments and all that are very, very helpful in gaining a working knowledge of these things that you can fulfill your real duty as a citizen. When you go to vote for somebody, what standard do you use to determine whether they're worthy of your vote or not? Well, if you don't know the Constitution, you don't know the kind of questions you need to be asking them, the sort of statements you need to be listening to hear from them, and you really cannot do your duty as a citizen when you vote. Certainly you can't do your duty as a juror when you serve in jury duty, because the juror is to judge the law according to the standard of the Constitution, as well as to judge the facts in the case before them. So this host kit is designed for anybody, anywhere. Would take a group of people and take them through the material. You don't really have to have a law degree. You're better off not having a law degree, or you don't even have to have a history degree to be able to conduct a class in your community. And as people who want to order the host kit can go as well to our website, iotconline.com, and there at the top of the page you can click host kit and order a host kit through that. Or if you prefer to make a phone call during the business hours here on the East Coast, you can call our toll-free number at Institute on the Constitution. That number is 866-730-9796. Again, that toll-free number for Institute on the Constitution is 866-730-9796. By the way, on our website, there's a lot of other materials available just to read there on the website, as well as materials in our store that can help educate you about our Constitution, about various aspects of it that are vitally important to understand to restore the Republic. The only way we're going to restore the Republic is by citizens educating themselves and then their friends and neighbors and family and fellow church attenders and so on. The grassroots method is the most effective way, because, you know, the major media is never going to let anybody know about what the Constitution truly says, and certainly the entertainment industry and our government-run school system does the opposite of telling students what the Constitution actually says. So we're going to have to bypass all of that, and it's doable. It's just citizens taking up the mantle and saying, hey, I need to do this. It's an investment of my time and energy and resources, but it's a worthwhile investment to seek to restore the Republic. And at this point in time, there's classes that have been conducted in all 50 states, and a lot of people are wrapping up some classes right now as we approach summer. It's a great encouragement, Dr. Stan, to be able to talk to people who are listening to your radio programs and then calling us. So we had people calling today from last night's program, said, hey, I need to get a host kit. How do I do that? And spread the word in their community.
Well, I think one of the most interesting things is you will never hear about the successes This program, which is all across America, has been going on for almost 10 years now, and all across the nation, people are putting on these classes, and other people are putting on classes. But the people who run the media, the people who really control even most of the conservative movement, don't want the American people to know, because the conservative movement's been thoroughly infiltrated, just like the liberal movement has been infiltrated. The last thing they want the American people to know is that this movement to learn the Constitution is really spreading. People are beginning to understand the Constitution. They're learning about it. They fear that the American people will wake up and understand that the people within the Brotherhood of Darkness, that's the Council on Foreign Relations, the Bilderberger Group, the Group of 30, the Trilateral Commission, these are subversive organizations dedicated to the destruction of the sovereignty of our nation and bringing about a world government. And, of course, the people of great wealth and power. And the last thing they want for the American people to know is these things really exist, that they do have a program, they do have an agenda. Certainly we know the Council on Foreign Relations ties in. It was organized as a front for Cecil Rhodes Secret Society. Certainly, just this last week over in Europe, while the Bilderbergers had a meeting, all the major leaders of the world, Henry Kissinger was there, David Rockefeller was there, representatives of the ruling elite of Europe and the United States were there, and not a word in the American media. Why? Because they control the media. They control the educational system. They control, certainly, the government itself. 11 of the 87 members of the Trilateral Commission hold all the key positions in the Obama administration, and you're never going to hear about that any other place. Go right ahead.
Well, the conclusion of the preamble of our Constitution says that we do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. Again, demonstrating clearly that this was a covenant that they were entering into, and there's a contractual nature that we the people have given certain powers to our federal government, but we require the federal government to stay within the limits that we the people have established and ordained for them to operate into. Now, we need to remember that this preamble just simply states purposes. It really grants no specific powers to the federal government. As we get into the body of the Constitution, Article 1, 2, 3, and so on, we'll look at the specific powers that are granted, but the preamble grants no powers. It just simply states the purposes, and as we have mentioned before, but it is worth repeating, the preamble is brief because the Declaration of Independence sets forth the basic ideals of the nation, and it truly is the preamble to our Constitution. A while back, I had a debate with a history professor at a college, and this history professor was claiming that from the point in time that they wrote the Declaration to the point in time in which the Constitution was ratified, a profound and radical change took place, and the people were entirely different, and so on and so forth, and basically they were repudiating the entire Declaration in the Constitution. Well, that's a flat-out lie, as we could clearly show you, especially when we look at the details at the end of the Constitution where it refers to the Declaration. That's a flat-out lie, but here's a history professor infecting the minds of young people with these lies rather than the truth, and that's true of most of the educational institutions in our country, which is why we got to do an end run around all of them, because indeed, if you remove the Declaration, you have no purpose. The Declaration states the purpose of government. It's the why document, where the Constitution is the how document. It's basically is a procedural document to show or set the limits as to how the government's going to function. It doesn't tell you why the government is in existence in the first place or what government's essential purpose is. Well, let's turn the page into Article 1. By the way, an easy way to remember a little bit of the outline of our Constitution is Article 1 deals with the legislative branch, Article 2 deals with the executive branch, and then Article 3 deals with the judicial branch. And by the way, they're in that order on purpose because the weight of importance is decreasing. That is the most important branch being the legislative, then the executive, and lastly, the judicial. Well, Article 1 establishes a bicameral, that's two-house Congress. And there's a House of Representatives that's popularly elected by districts within each state, and then a Senate, which originally was chosen by the state legislature. And this is an important distinction to remember, because up until the 17th Amendment, 1913, the state legislatures were directly in control of their senators. They had two senators that represented their state, and the state legislature appointed those senators and could remove those senators at will for any reason whatsoever. They send a senator down to Washington, D.C., and they make very specific directions as to what that senator is to do in his office, and he decides once he gets to Washington, D.C., that his buddies or the party leaders or whoever it is going to direct his steps, and he's going to vote whatever his party wants him to vote, or whatever his cronies or some lobbyist wants him to vote, against what the wishes of the state legislature are. They would immediately, and they did, they did this frequently, history shows it, they would remove that senator from his office and immediately replace him with another senator, a senator of their choosing who would do their bidding in Washington, D.C. And the important thing to remember here, this is the design of our founders, that the states would have a profound and very potent power over the federal government. They could stop the federal government's wild and crazy spending. They could stop things like the Patriot Act. They could stop anything the states wanted to stop in Washington, D.C. through their senators. And those wicked people who wanted to take control of our government and destroy our fabric of government, they conspired there in the beginning part of the 20th century, and they accomplished this 17th Amendment in order specifically to destroy the power and the check that the state governments had upon the federal government. If you look, the results was very dramatic. I mean, if you compare the federal budget, just as one measure, up to 1913, it was very small, and after 1913 it began to explode in greater and greater. To today, well, you know, a $3 trillion budget. It's ridiculous. Well, likewise, if you look at the growth of federal programs, very few federal programs existed. The federal government was very small. Federal government had very few functions until 1913. And after that, my goodness, it's just an explosion of programs, an explosion of control, an explosion of power as they were, the federal government is increasingly been taking power from the states and accruing it to itself unconstitutionally. And it's all because the 17th Amendment went through and states no longer had the power to check what their senators were going to do, which meant the senators now were basically whores. They would go to the highest bidder, whoever promised them the most goodies or the most money, or whoever gave them the most money for re-election. All those things. Now the senators are manipulated pawns and pieces, not of their own states. And therefore, they're not up there in Washington, D.C. to protect their states, to help their states. They're there to keep themselves getting reelected and getting their perks that they are rewarded with. Well, this was not as it was designed by our founders. Now, why was there two houses in the first place? Well, this is a result of the great compromise that was suggested by Roger Sherman of Connecticut. You see, a natural problem arose in the constitutional debate because the small states wanted equal representation. They said, "Hey, you know, we're in this, and we need to be equally represented in the legislative branch." Well, the big states said, "Well, man, that's not fair. We have more people in our state, and we're going to be paying more taxes as a result of that, and we should have a greater say." And it was really a logjam where there was an irreconcilable conflict between the small states and the large states. And the resolution of it was this: let's have two houses, one which is by representation, so the large states obviously were going to have more congressmen in the House of Representatives than the small states, but then in the Senate, every state has equal representation. So a state that has very few people, say a thinly populated state like Alaska, would have the same number in the Senate as the state of California, which has a very large population. And so the compromise was worked such that both issues were addressed. Now, the beauty of it is also that any bill that is going to go through has to pass through both houses, which meant it would cool hothead legislation, providing time for additional reflection and balance. And in a sense, they were following a pattern that the English Parliament had developed. That is, Parliament had the House of Commons, the more popular of the houses, and the House of Lords that was more deliberative and tended to be more aristocratic. But the idea here was that these two houses, if every piece of legislation has to pass through them, it's likely that something that is against the will of the people in general, represented through their representatives in the House of Representatives, or disfavorable to a particular state, and so the states through their state legislature represented it in the Senate, it will be stopped. In other words, it was designed to create gridlock. Well, I remember all the hue and cry about, oh, what a terrible thing, there's gridlock in Washington. No, we didn't understand. Our founders designed it for gridlock. That is, they didn't want a whole lot of things going on. They wanted the federal government to do just a few things that were absolutely necessary for the federal government to do. The state governments were to do all the major things in life. And if you don't believe me on that, then just read Federalist Paper 45. Federalist 45 very clearly states that the federal government, very few limited things, particularly those things that relating to other countries, you know, whether it's war, having to go to war, or trade issues with other countries, just external issues, and almost nothing to do with the internal government and regulation of the country. That was to be handled by the states that had a wide-ranging power, and there was most of the life and issues of people as citizens were going to be issues that were dealt with the state government and not the federal government. Today, that has been turned on its head as the federal government has intruded into every area of citizens' lives.
Of course, this is a total violation of the Constitution. And the thing is that the people who are doing it know it. They know that there are limitations placed upon what Congress can do. But they don't want the American people to realize that these people have betrayed their oath of office. Their loyalty is not to America, but to the internationalist dream. These people are globalists. That's why they've taken away our tariffs, why we're transferring our jobs and manufacturing and wealth to other countries, so we can impoverish the American people. We'll be right back in just a moment. Well, David, you got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, thank you, Dr. Stan. Well, the one thing that's very apparent in the design of our founders here is that a bicameral legislature like this could...
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your 2-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
With food prices soaring to all-time highs, as the dollar continues to fall in value, what can you and your family do to guarantee that fresh, nutritious vegetables will make it to your dinner table? Garden in a Can. Garden in a Can is your source for premium, long-term storable seeds. Garden in a Can is ready when you are. Plant them now or store them for when you really need them. There are 16 large, hermetically sealed, non-hybrid, open-pollinated packets of seeds, along with detailed planting instructions sealed in a can for ultimate long-term protection. Garden in a Can. It's that simple. Fresh, healthy, easy. Only $69.95 for over a half acre of safe, fresh vegetables. Ready when you are. Stop procrastinating and start preparing with Garden in a Can. For more details, visit GardenInACan.com today. That's GardenInACan.com or call 866-598-7396, 866-598-7396.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-.
To be able to re-educate the American people on something that the leaders of this country hate, and that is the Constitution and the limitation it puts on their power. Because, of course, you limit their power, then we can be free. If we allow them unbridled power, then, of course, freedom, as we've noted, will soon become simply a remembrance of things past. Well, let me just point out, of course, we carry a number of items. We carry something called the Freedom Documents, which were put together by our good friend who ran for the Constitution, Chuck Baldwin, who ran for the Constitution Party presidency. It's called the Freedom Documents, and it's about 40 different documents, starting with the Mayflower Compact and all the way up to the Gettysburg Address. The founding documents of our country, and they are available from Radio Liberty, and we recommend them to you. We have a four-tape set called The Foundations of Our Freedom. My interviews with a constitutional lawyer, just going into the background of why they constituted our Constitution as they did. And these items and so much more is available from Radio Liberty, certainly Bill Federer's wonderful book, America's God and Country. We certainly recommend to you. That's America's God and Country, the number 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. We do hope many of you will want to get the membership list of the Brotherhood of Darkness. I think it's important to have. If you want to understand what's really going on financially, certainly we are carrying Thomas Wood's excellent book called Meltdown. He's with the Ludwig von Mises Institute, or the von Mises Institute. Explains the basis of economics and why, of course, everything we're doing is making things worse. We do hope, of course, you'll want to get my talk on the financial tsunami. That's the financial tsunami. That you'll want to get the syllabus we have called the Financial Armageddon. And it simply gives you a lot of the speeches and documents that you will never see covered elsewhere. And then, of course, we do hope many of you out there will want to get some of the new items we've put together. For instance, the story of the sinking of the USS Liberty, or the attempt to sink the USS Liberty and kill all of the sailors on board. You'll hear the interviews with the sailors as they tell you how their ship was attacked. And they were warned if they ever told the truth,